Welcome back one and all to The Damage Report with me, John Iderola, and joining us today, a special treat, comedian, commentator, and author of Legitimate Kid, Ida Rodriguez returns. Ida, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you? So good to be back with you.
It's good. First of all, thank you for the times that you filled in while I was gone. It was great to know that every day there were awesome people holding the show down. So I really appreciate that, especially as you're all over the country and you're releasing books and you're doing all this stuff. So thank you for everything you did.
No, thank you. I just want you to know that when I am on the road and people from TYT come talk to me after the show, I can't tell you how many people out there love you and adore you and are like John fans. It is so refreshing to see white straight men who really like you and you resonate with them. And I'm like, this is why the work has to keep going, because you are bleeding into the world in such a positive way. And it's just dope. So I was like, I gotta come on, because everywhere I go, people love you.
I appreciate that. I would like to help if I can. I have noticed through the course of my life that white straight men have arguably some issues. So I'd like to help if possible. Anyway, it's great to have you here. And I mentioned it, but I don't know to what extent over the last 3 months when you were on the show, you were able to talk about your book. But would you like to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, what I want to say is just thank you so much to the people who have bought it and have shared their stories. People who are my book is called Legitimate Kid, is my struggle. Me seeking legitimacy my whole life. Someone called me a bastard when I was 8, and it was a classmate, and it was reaffirmed by the adults in the neighborhood. And I was very traumatized by that. And so I wanted to explore that wound. And as a result, what I've gotten in return is just a healing that I didn't expect, because hearing from so many people who have suffered from that same, that same thing, sending me messages, people sending me their birth certificates without their father's last name, it's just been very, very refreshing to see that people are reading and, and that they see themselves in my story, because that's what I wrote it for. So,
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I know, both from what I've read about the book and, from your comedy, like you have lived a lot of life. I think it's going to be fascinating to dive into that. I think everyone should check it out. And I share your concern about reading as a person who on the side on my Patreon, I write as well. I worry that the next generation will have no use for books, but it seems like there's still some reading going on. So that's good. That's good. Yeah. Anyway, with all that said, we have a lot that we're going to be getting to through the course of this show. Almost too much. Not only massive updates coming out of Israel and Palestine and the White House in regards to that conflict, but the Supreme Court finally sets up a code of conduct. We're going to evaluate what that's worth. We've got Donald Trump being thrown under the bus and newly released tapes from some of his former lackeys and lawyers on his attempt to overthrow the election and the Republican attempt to double or triple down on their anti-abortion strategy, despite the many losses that they've accrued over the last few years. So that'll be fun and a lot more besides. But with that said, we have to start with something serious, which is I like combat sports. I'm a fan of the WWE, and I like government. I don't need them to combine, but we are racing towards that, as you'll see in this clip.
Sir, I wish you was in the truck with me when I was building my plumbing company. Myself and my wife was running the office, because I sure remember working pretty hard and long hours. Pretends like he's self-made. What a clown. Fraud. Always has been, always will be. Quit the tough guy act and these Senate hearings. You know where to find me. Any place, any time, cowboy. Sir, this is a time, this is a place. If you want to run your mouth, we can be two consenting adults. We can finish it here.
Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?
I'd love to do it right now.
Well, stand your butt up then.
You stand your butt up.
Oh, hold on. Oh, stop it.
Is that your solution?
No, sit down. Sit down.
Okay.
You're a United States Senator.
Sit down. Active.
Okay. Sit down, please.
All right. Can I respond?
Mr. Hold it. Hold it. If we can, no, I have the mic. I'm sorry.
This is what he said.
You'll have your time.
Okay.
Can I respond?
Oh, no, you can't. This is a hearing.
And what I'm hearing is the death knell of a functioning democracy. That is Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, threatening the Teamsters leader, Sean O'Brien, to engage in a brawl in the middle of a Senate help hearing committee. I mean, I guess the Teamsters president also wanted to engage in the fight. By the way, this is not the first time that Mark Wayne Mullen has threatened to fight someone. This is not the first time that Mark Wayne Mullen has threatened to fight that particular person. So this is just now a thing in our government. You know, I like jokingly said during our debate coverage last week that I'm surprised no one on the debate stage has rushed each other, because that's obviously something the right wants to see. But that is actually going on in government. And Ida, should we be embarrassed? Should we be surprised? Like, how are we supposed to react to what we're seeing?
I come from the inner city where fighting was the language of a lot of people who didn't have the coping, the mechanisms to deal with things from a different place, because they didn't have the tools. But to see people who have grown up with privilege that are in positions where they have health insurance, so they have access to mental health care, it's really just devastating to see this. As a mom, like, I think you now, as you have joined you've joined the group of parenthood, what our children are watching. Children are observational learners. We tell our kids to learn to resolve their issues without violence, not to fight, that this is not an elevated way to do things. But the officials who are making the laws, making decisions about our country, this is how they behave. We are not only just a joke internally, and even though we may laugh at this, this is a serious issue. The world is watching. It makes us vulnerable to other people to see that we are falling apart. As much as we like to frame ourselves as a superpower, there are people looking at us and saying, the apprentice guy was the president. This is what they do now. You got a congresswoman doing pushups and yoga on video. Like, this is a joke. It is the peanut gallery. And what I want to say is that I think that was the most concerning about this. I know I'm being long-winded, because that I didn't even see this story. So I, as a comedian, I'm like, yo, I got material. But I think what's the most scary part about it, there's a great group, a great percentage of our country that looks at that and celebrates it and says, this is somebody being real. This is where we are. And it is such a strong indicator about the mental health condition of the collective in this country.
Yeah. Yeah, I 100% agree. First of all, they like violence. They like blood. They like the idea that you don't have to try to persuade your political opponents or whatever. You can beat them or potentially kill them. He's being real, except, like, can we point out that he is being the exact opposite of real? Yeah. Mark Wayne Mullen knows there's not going to be a fight in the Senate hearing chamber. What he is doing, it's bluster, it's bravado. It's very easy to threaten someone when you know Bernie Sanders is going to hold you back. Like, this is not a tough guy. This is a tough guy hiding behind the fact that clearly he's not actually going to get punched in the face. And I will also say, like, look, this is, as you point out, it's like on some level, I guess, funny that it's also deeply concerning. But, and you know, I don't want to make everything about fascism, but this sort of thing, it feels like of a kind with Donald Trump being really ridiculous and absurd. Like, those might seem like, oh man, the right, they really look bad. This is good. They're going to be ineffective because of this. But this is part of the strategy. Government is not supposed to be a serious thing. It's not supposed to be a respectable thing. It's not supposed to be an effective thing. It is supposed to be a ridiculous thing, because a ridiculous thing, you do not have to respect. You don't expect anything of a ridiculous thing like the government that they're showing us. It trains people to think, this isn't serious. This isn't something that can help me. This isn't something I should be involved in. This is spectacle. And that's all it needs to deliver at that point. There's already a significant portion of the country that thinks that. With Donald Trump's speeches and people threatening each other on the Senate floor, this is the exact opposite of how you have a government that's responsive to the people. And it is not an accident. You're going to see more of this bluster and buffoonery and looking ridiculous. Fascists throughout history have always looked absurd. It is not an accident. It's a tactic. Absolutely. That's what I think.
And they're pandering, you know, I agree with you 100%. They're pandering to that base. And even if they're not willing to fight, because they're not, they have too much to lose, they perpetuate the violence that we're seeing in the country. And the people who do have things to lose and are willing to lose it all, because those people are saying it's good to punch somebody in the face if you don't disagree. That's the good old American way. It's really sad. It's insulting. And it is, like I always say, is a very big indicator of where the education system is in this country, where politicians know that you are dumb enough that they can tell you whatever they want to tell you and you're going to believe it. And we should be angry about that.
Yeah. And however dumb people are, they want you to be dumber.
Congressman, explain to us what happened with you and Kevin McCarthy.
I got elbowed in the back and it kind of caught me off guard because it was a clean shot to the kidneys. And I turned back and there was Kevin. And I for a minute, I was kind of, what the heck just happened? And then I chased after him, of course. He's as I've stated many times, he's a bully with $17 million and a security detail. You know, he's the type of guy that when you're a kid would throw a rock over the fence and run home and hide behind its mama's skirt.
That is Representative Tim Burchett, who, if we are to believe him, was attacked in the halls of Congress by the now disgraced former Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, who snuck up behind him and gave him an elbow shot in the kidneys and then ran away, hiding behind a security detail and denying that he did it. And look, I don't trust anybody involved in any of this, but there were a lot of witnesses. And so apparently this happened. Here's a little bit more from Tim Burchett.
And so you chased him? What do you mean you chased
him? I just ran after him. I was like, what the heck? You know, why'd you do that? You know, because it was, like I said, if you ever been hit in the kidneys, it's a little different. You don't have to hit very hard to cause a little bit of pain, a lot of pain. And he just, of course, as he always does, he just denies it or blames somebody else or something, you know. And it was just a little heated, but I just backed off because I saw no reason. I wasn't gaining anything from it. Wait, and then everybody saw it, so it didn't really matter.
And so coming out of this, I don't know what Tim Burchett is supposed to do. I don't know what the government's going to do. I don't know what me as a still concerned citizen is supposed to do. So they are just going around in the halls of Congress and it hitting each other when their backs are turned. It's like the perfect attack from Kevin McCarthy, by the way, that he didn't like go up to Tim Burchett and like push him or something. He hit him in the back and then ran away and said, no, I didn't do it. It was probably that other person. I didn't do it. It's just, it's disgraceful and like deceptive at the same time. Ida, what do you think?
First of all, I know I am going to get some backlash for this, but he sounds like Sling Blade.
You are probably going to get some backlash for that. And not a bad movie, by the way.
He does. I don't care at this point. Like, why should I employ any respect towards people who don't respect themselves or the country? This is a joke. It's just, you know, listen, I'm from the South. I'm from Florida. And I look at the tropes. I hear the tropes and all the stuff that people say about those of us who are Southerners. And I can't stand to see people who perpetuate those stereotypes. You know, that whole idea, running behind his mama's skirt, like that kind of stuff. You are college educated. You are an official of the United States. You are an elected official in this country. People trust you with their money. They trust you with their lives. They trust you with the decisions about their communities. And this is what you guys are doing in Congress. And then you dare to speak out against, you know, AOC, or you talk about, you know, Jamal Bowman, and you talk about Corey, and you just continue to talk about these people. I'm just calling them by name and say that they lack respect and dignity. But these are the people that are doing it. These are your officials. We need a wash, John. It's also, we need a wash. This is corrupt from the inside out. It has become a joke. People that are in office have no business being in office. You need to be psychologically evaluated along with having all of the, you know, meeting the credentials, the prerequisites to be an elected official. We have to evaluate these people's mental state. The way that these people have been behaving, it is a reflection of what's going on in our country, but they gotta go. Like this, they gotta go.
It's embarrassing. Like, I don't know how much I care about the reason for this, but It is likely that Burchett voted to remove Kevin McCarthy as speaker, and Kevin McCarthy is holding a grudge. And so sneaking up on him and attacking him. Apparently Kevin McCarthy disrespected Burchett's like religious views or something. He really seems to have it in for this guy, but look, I don't think this is going to happen, but if there were that many witnesses and you know this is happening during an interview, like likely somebody was filming that, then charge him. He assaulted you. You can't run up behind someone and elbow him in the kidneys. That's assault. There are laws for a reason. And so I would love to see that, maybe to set a precedent that we're not going to just go around slugging each other. Final point goes to you.
The only thing I wanted to say was that the corporations that actually run this country must really have a field day knowing that these clowns are the one, all they got to do is give them a check and they're going to do whatever they need them to do. But there's no dignity in it anymore. They're like, they must sit down and laugh and say, look at these idiots. Mm-hmm. Thank God the country is in our hands. I'm sure that's what they're saying.
And every one of these clowns that's doing this are, they're millionaires, if not in some cases, billionaires. Like they are all elitists, like that is what they are doing. And this is a tool that they use, as we've already laid out. That said, I want to jump into our next story. So why don't we prep for that? I guess it's been a long time coming. The Supreme Court has finally done something, arguably, in the wake of so many amazing bombshell investigations into the corrupt practices of members of the court, and particularly Clarence Thomas. If you don't remember these stories, you haven't followed it throughout the year. I mean, Clarence Thomas has accepted seemingly every vacation that has happened in the last 20 years has been him with billionaires that's just been given to him, as well as many other ways that he has financially benefited from his position on the court in terms of real estate and helping out his mom and all of that. Many great investigations being done by ProPublica throughout the year on that, but he is not alone. Alito also took trips without disclosing it with GOP donors. In all of these cases, they're interacting with people who have already had or are likely to have business before the Supreme Court. Gorsuch also failed to disclose that he sold his home to the CEO of a major law firm. Seems relevant, but it isn't just the conservatives on the court. Nobody is free or innocent on the court from these sorts of behaviors. And there's been a lot of pressure for far more than a code of conduct, but that's what we're getting. So let's evaluate what's in this new ethics code. It says that the justices promise to, quote, uphold the integrity and independence of the judiciary and avoid impropriety and the appearance of impropriety. They're not supposed to allow family, social, political, financial, or other relationships to influence official conduct or justice, or knowingly convey or permit others to convey the impression that they are in a special position to influence the justice. So a lot of this, in theory, philosophically is okay, but it's also highly vague. It prevents them from knowingly using the prestige of their office to advance the private interests of the justice or others, which should cut out like basically all of their speaking engagements, everything having to do with their books and all that. It's not going to. And importantly, if you remember anything coming out of this discussion, it should not be the specific language of this ethics code. It's that it is not in any way that has been expressed binding. There's nobody that's going to investigate. There's no punishments that will be levied. They can immediately begin violating this over and over and over again, and literally nothing will happen to them. And there's one extra bit of like spit in the eye coming out of this. I will let you know about that in just a sec, but Ida, what do you think?
I mean, it's like they say in my hood where I grew up, yo, the police is investigating the police to see if the police did something wrong. That, you know, I wonder all of the women who are are pro-life and, you know, anti-choice have had the opportunity to take as many vacations as Clarence has. I wonder if all of the people who have been fighting and upholding these values to oppress other people because of their own personal views are experiencing all of the benefits and the privileges that these justices are experiencing along with the Congress people in this country. You know, you bite your nose to spite your face and, you know, you still. Mm-hmm.
I referenced earlier that there's an extra little bit of insult to injury in this. So you know how like sometimes people will apologize if they offended you or something. There's these ways that you can undercut what you're doing and make clear to the person that you're supposedly being sincere. Begins with a statement that the court had largely already adhered to the tenets of the document, saying that the lack of an official code had, quote, led in recent years to the misunderstanding that the justices of this court, unlike all other jurists in this country, regard themselves as unrestricted by any ethics rules. The primary purpose of the new code, according to it, is to dispel this misunderstanding. So all of this reporting from ProPublica and others about corruption to the tune of millions and millions of dollars over the course of years, or in some cases decades, all of these things they did with people who had business before the court, the getaways and the gatherings and all of the gifts and all of that, you all misunderstood that as potentially being an ethics problem. So if none of that was an actual problem, none of that needed anything to be done about it, well then going forward, if they were to do those same things, at least the misunderstanding has been dispelled. It wouldn't be a problem if Clarence Thomas went on more trips, because the past trips weren't a problem either. So this is worse than doing nothing in multiple ways. It is designed to get people to think, oh, I guess they listened to us, when they clearly didn't. They're doing a little bit of public relations, and even in that, they waited months before putting out a meaningless document. Any final thoughts, Ida?
Just gaslighting 101. Gaslighting 101. Mm-hmm. They do it to us every day, and some of us like it.
Yeah. Yeah. The solution is not a non-binding code of ethics where nothing will happen. The solution is that multiple members of the Supreme Court need to step down. Amongst many other needed reforms of the SCOTUS, when it comes to corruption, there are multiple people there that have no business being on the court.
We need
that said, what's that?
We need a wash. That's what I keep saying. It's dirty from the bottom to the top, from the left to the right. We need a wash.
100%. Okay, we're going to take our first break. We come back, we're going to give you a little bit of a roundup of some of the recent developments, both here in the US and overseas when it comes to Israel-Palestine, as well as a number of other issues. We'll see you in a few. I'm like trying to get my instincts back after being gone for 3 months. That did not feel like 37 seconds. I thought I had quite a bit more time, but we're back. And if you're just joining us now, please hit the like button, because we have a lot of news to get to and we want everyone to pile in. But with that, why don't we jump into this?
Have you expressed any specific concerns to Israel on that, sir?
Well, I have not been reluctant in expressing my concerns what's going on. And it's my hope and expectation that there will be less intrusive action relative to the hospital. I remain somewhat hopeful, but the hospital must be protected.
Okay, so that is Biden, upon being prompted, pointing out that the horror that's happening at Al-Shifa, something needs to be done. The hospital needs to be protected. I would have been very clear that the patients and the people working there and those sheltering there need to be protected, including the many incredibly young patients whose lives, some have already been lost, many more at risk. And we could certainly critique the fact that, man, there was no energy to what he was saying there. Maybe it was supposed to get across some gravitas, or that he gets the seriousness of this, or that it's affecting him a lot, but it felt pretty low energy. And that's not the worst part. The worst part is that coming out of that, where at least he said the hospital needs to be protected, the White House immediately sought to clarify his comments, because what he was referring to was this extra burden that faces the IDF as they go into Gaza. This is according to the National Security Council coordinator, by the way, because Hamas does shelter themselves behind civilian infrastructure. This includes places like hospitals, schools, or tunnels. And the way that Hamas operates places civilians in Gaza at greater risk, which is a tough problem for the IDF when legitimate targets are buried inside civilian infrastructure. So look, of course, that is not incorrect. Hamas has definitely done that. But when you have a time where Biden is at least pointing out that maybe this can be a hospital that is not leveled, to then immediately back off and say, what we meant is that it's going to be tough for the IDF because of stuff that Hamas did. So we're not going to do anything. That's what it feels like to me. It feels like Biden was sort of arm twisted a little bit into sounding like he had some empathy, and then those around him backed off even from that. Anyway, we have a lot more on this. Ida, what do you think?
I just have a severe concern for what's happening in the Middle East. And, it's really hard to talk about it because like I told you earlier, I've been advised not to speak about it because of the consequences of whatever you're saying being taken by people. And I decided to talk about it for that reason and just lean into it and face it that, you know, we are in a time right now where if you say you really like apples, it means you hate oranges. And, you know, it speaks to the, you know, the information and the education level of the people in this country. A lot of people are having discourse about these issues and have no idea what's happening. You know, I've been to Israel. I've been to Palestine. I don't want any of those people to be dead in either of the places. But I think it's important to be just to be honest about what we're having, what this conversation is and what the government in this country does. You know, I come from a group of people who are always being condemned for being here. My father is undocumented and people are always in this country saying, why are you here? And I'm like, if your government wouldn't be putting its nose in my country's business, we would probably be at home. And I think that, you know, a lot of people in this country are suffering. A lot of people in this country have needs, but America is always involved in everybody else's business because they don't care about the people here or there or anywhere. What they care about is money, power, and position. And so when I hear Joe Biden speak, which, you know, I'm not a Joe Biden fan and I haven't been prior to this crisis, but I definitely am not a fan of his. I think that we have to face the reality is people in Palestine are suffering and the people who have nothing to do with it and people in Israel are suffering. And I know women in both countries who are tired of it. I met with a group of women when I was there. I went to Ramallah and I sat at a table with Israeli mothers and Palestinian mothers alike who are like, these people start all of this stuff and our kids are the ones who suffer and we are tired of this. So, you know, like I'm not going to denounce that I'm not going to be publicly saying that I don't give a damn about Palestinian life. How, you know, who am I? Those are brown people just like me. And I'm not going to say that. And that doesn't mean that I want Israel to be erased and that I want Israeli children to be murdered. And if you are that dumb that that's what you deduce from what I'm saying, then you need to pick up a book. But, you know, I am so tired of this political positioning that is constantly at the forefront where people are suffering. And that is children are being erased off the face of this planet and have been from both countries, which, you know, you demonize one and then the other one. The stuff that has been happening is real. White supremacy is real. It exists in Israel. It exists all over the world. And that does not mean that I'm anti-Semitic. That just means that the truth is the truth. And as a brown person who has been oppressed and feels it on a daily basis, I cannot with good conscience sit here and say that I don't give a damn about children that's being murdered. And at the 100%. Same time, bring them damn hostages home. Prioritize the hostage life because I don't think that people are prioritizing their lives either. They have been used as a political ploy and they have been disregarded. And there are babies that have been over there that are being held hostage. And nobody gives a damn about the people. That's the problem. Nobody gives a damn about the people. They keep saying the people, but they don't care about the people because they're not prioritizing life.
100%. Seems consistent. You know, look, we get criticized a lot sometimes by people that aren't familiar with what we individually or maybe the network has said. So if you are new to us talking about these sorts of topics, then welcome. I'm going to argue that my position here is consistent with the way that I've approached every foreign conflict for literally decades, from long before I had a platform like this. I don't want civilians to be massacred. I don't want it here. I don't want it in Israel. I don't want it in Yemen. I don't want it in Ukraine. I didn't want it in Syria or Afghanistan or Iraq or any of the other conflicts that we spoke out against or that, you know, at large, the network has spoken out against for literally decades. And so consistency, sometimes people say that they like it, but they don't. But for me, at least, I'm only responsible for what I say, and I feel like it's consistent. Ida's obviously not happy with Biden's strategy. She is not alone. More than 400 US officials from a ton of different areas of the bureaucracy have signed a letter protesting his policy so far. We're going to give you just a couple excerpts from it. It says, we call on President Biden to urgently demand a ceasefire and to call for de-escalation of the current conflict by securing the immediate release of the Israeli hostages and arbitrarily detained Palestinians, the restoration of water, fuel, electricity, and other basic services, and the passage of adequate humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip. They also cite that the overwhelming majority of Americans support a ceasefire, something that I don't know why that's not talked about more. Seems relevant that his stance, his policy goes against 66% of Americans and 80% of Democrats who feel that way. So obviously there are many in government who don't agree with Biden. I want to give credit to one, Representative Ilhan Omar. This week is going to introduce legislation to disapprove of a multi-million dollar package of bomb equipment that the Biden administration had previously, prior to this conflict, said that they were going to sell $320 million of kits for precision guidance kits, kits for bombs. After the conflict began, Biden has announced that they are going to be selling that. There's no guarantee that Omar's bill would come up for a vote, and Biden could veto it regardless. But if there is a companion bill in the Senate, then that would trigger at least a vote, and we could get people, you know, on the record on this. So limited things being done in government, Ida, to try to, you know, change the course of this conflict, which we're going to talk about the toll in just a minute. But yeah, at least there is some pushback against Joe Biden.
I mean, and there should be, because look at the conditions of the Americans. It's, you know, what I'm talking about is this, there's this global disease that's going on, this capitalism, this greed, this oppression. It has been here forever. And this generation that's coming is tired of it, and they are beginning to turn this upside down, flip the table. People are really tired. This is a global things that are happening in Congo and the Sudan, like people are suffering globally. And these rich mother effers that continue to just comment on what's happening from the comfort of their own home, who are not being affected. It's so easy to chime in on war because you've never experienced it. What a privilege we have that, yes, we've had terrorist attacks in this country, but our daily life does not consist of survival, having, you know, materials around our homes to protect us from missiles. We don't know what that life is like. So it's easy to get on Twitter or X, whatever it's called. I'm not on that foolishness, and say, I think. You got to pay attention to the people that we have been employing that run this country. We are vulnerable. And what we don't understand is that this can't continue. It will not continue. You cannot continue to do this to people and think that there will be no consequences. It will happen in America, and yeah, we have to stop. We have to say these leaders are not working, and we need to employ better people.
Yeah. By the way, everything that you just said about how easy it is to do that, obviously that's also what I do. But at least from this position of privilege, I try to center concern for the people that are suffering most in this conflict. It would be super easy to just say, yeah, it's a military strategy. It has to happen. It's like to express in such a callous way the pursuit of an ideology when you don't know the region, you don't know the conflict. I've spent a little bit of time in Israel when I was studying in Cairo, but even then, like, there should be a humility that runs throughout all of that. And the humility should be grounded in being most concerned for the people who are suffering most. And right now, there is no debate to be had about who is suffering most. When you have, you know, like prematurely born children whose lives are 100% not, we don't know what's going to happen in the next day or two. It kind of feels like that should be the thing that we should be primarily concerned about. But I want to turn briefly to that, because we know from the beginning of the conflict, the bombing campaign in Gaza, many civilians have died. We have raced past 11,000 civilians. Based on one accounting, the US government says they believe that's an undercount. To put it in perspective, that is one out of every 200 people in Gaza has been killed. To put it in perspective, in terms of the children, 4,609 children have been killed. Here's a visualization from the Washington Post. Every one of those dots is a child who was killed over the span of 5 weeks. Some of their names have been picked out, but every one of them had a future, in theory, has a family. every single dot on that image. And if you're on mobile, you can't even see the individual dots, but there's a lot of them. There's 4,609. Every one of those is a tragedy that should cause people to stop and to question why things are going the way they're going, why more isn't being done, because that 4,609 is not the accurate number, because from today, while we've been broadcasting, more dots can be added to that list. More will be if things continue, and everybody in charge seems to think it's perfectly fine to continue in the way that we're going. But why should we be surprised that so many civilians have been killed? There have been strikes against refugee camps, residential neighborhoods, bakeries, water towers, solar panels, fishing boats, schools, hospitals, mosques, and churches. All of the places that, sure, yes, in some cases, Hamas uses, but also civilians use. And the toll just keeps going up. And you can see it mapped out week by week here. Just like every one of those bars and the top shaded portions are just the kids. How this isn't a bigger focus nationally. To put it in more perspective, here is a log of children killed in major conflicts, the amount and over time. And you can see that Gaza, like sure, more children killed in Syria and Afghanistan over the course of like 125 months. This is 5 weeks. If you look at the monthly average of child casualties and conflicts, history is being made right now, the most tragic sort of history, because over 4,000 on average per month being killed. There is simply no comparison in any other conflict that we've experienced. And every one of those conflicts down there, Syria, Afghanistan, Yemen, Iraq, are themselves horrific tragedies with massive tolls in terms of human suffering and loss of life. And yet there is nothing like what's happening in Gaza right now. And so when coming out of all of this, what we get is Joe Biden like looking down at the table, looking at his hands and talking as if he's thinking about what he's gonna have for lunch. Like no matter how concerned we are, no matter how fired up we are, it is not enough in the light of what we are seeing. Ida, what do you think?
I hear you. I agree with you. I don't know if my friends who are in Israel and in Palestine are still alive. I ate with a woman whose house was on the Gaza border, who was had a mural up that wanted peace, and she would invite people from the Gaza Strip as well as, which are not allowed to come over, but she had this mural where she was praying for peace because she wanted it. Her house was on that border and that town is gone. And, you know, I think about the people that I met that treated me like a human being, because I did get treated poorly in Israel as well. I did get pushed by a man and they were like, he thought you were Palestinian. I'm sorry. That's what my tour guide told me. I couldn't say anything. I'd had to take it. And because I was not in my country, you know, and I was not safe. But I think about the people that I did meet that were like, we don't want this. We just want a peace. We want our kids not to walk around with machine guns. And when I think about when I went to Ramallah, and I just think about the children, like I was around little kids, and I sit here and I think, you know, everybody has all of these, you know, I've seen some of my fellow comedians. I've learned a lot about people in the last couple of months. I've learned about how some of the people that I thought were my friends are racist because they don't value brown life. They don't value black life. And they do as long as it doesn't interrupt their white comfort. And that for me has been very painful to see and to watch. You know, as a human being who gives a damn about other people, I'm with you. I am for the people, and that's what I've always been for. This whole picking sides, and I'm a Red Sox Democrat or a Blue Yankee, whatever y'all do, that people have taken these sides without any care or consideration or any real information. I'm for the people. I've always been about the people. Human life is valuable to me, all of them. And I don't value one over the other. But we are not going to sit here and pretend that this that is happening right now is not real. And that is the problem that I have with some people.
Okay, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna center ourselves, come back, more news. So much to do, everyone. If you're just joining us now, please hit the like button, share the stream, and we're going to jump into the news. The Washington Post has obtained video recordings from a number of different co-defendants in Donald Trump's indictments having to do with overthrowing the results of the election. We need to be specific because there are so many different court cases. Some of them are still standing by the big lie, standing by Donald Trump, but others seem all too willing to throw him and other members of his team under the bus. Here is a former, technically a lawyer, Jenna Ellis.
I emphasized to him, I thought that the claims and the ability to challenge the election results was essentially over because of the dismissal of the Texas versus Pennsylvania case from the United States Supreme Court. And he said to me in a kind of excited tone, well, we don't care and we're not going to leave. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, the boss, meaning President Trump, and everyone understood the boss, that's what we all called him. He said the boss is not going to leave under any circumstances. We are just going to stay in power. And I said to him, well, it doesn't quite work that way, you realize. And he said, we don't care.
So there's obviously throwing Dan Scavino under the bus. Dan Scavino there is relaying to her in December of 2020 what the stance of Donald Trump and his team is, which is we don't care about any of these court challenges. Like all the stuff that we say that we're fighting on, we're raising hundreds of millions of dollars. We don't care. They're going to do their investigations. They're going to show that the election wasn't stolen and we are not going to leave. Now, thankfully, that proved not to be true. They did in the end leave, but she is pointing out that that was what was floating around. She also, like, she's trying to make herself look good in comparison, saying that's not how it works. No, we have a democracy. Remember, she was taking part in a lot of this. She was so close to this effort that Rudy Giuliani COVID farted on her. So, like, but that's okay. If she has information and she wants to help out, that's good.
Okay, information.
But anyway, let's get to a little bit more of the quotes. Well, look, there's a little bit of video of some of the other members. So Chesbro, one of the lawyers as well. Perhaps we can get to Sidney Powell, but Ida, we're racing towards a lot of these like court proceedings. And I like that these videos are released just because they remind me that there are so many people in these different challenges that are racing to save themselves by throwing these people under the bus. And he's been able to avoid consequences for everything he's done his entire life. But I don't know, when you have all of these insiders willing to spill the beans, I don't know how you survive. But what do you think?
You know, it's funny. Isn't just an indication of like the quality of people that they are. Like when you think about the people who were like the sycophants that were around him, and they were like, oh, you know, just they were worshiping him at every step because they felt that there was opportunity on the other side of it. But now, you know, it's just an indicator of the quality of the people. Not only are they willing to compromise themselves, they have no loyalty. We already know that no integrity is the baseline, because that's how you come aboard an operation like that. But just to see the ease and be like, yeah, the boss, that's what we called him. Everybody knew he was the boss too. Let there be no mistake that we are talking about Donald Trump, the boss, also known as that, you know, like they're willing, you know, he stashes money under the bed, like they will throw it all away. You know what I mean? They're willing to say, you know, he spat on the waitress. Like, it's amazing to me how everything is okay until it can disrupt your well-being and your livelihood and your freedom. Then all of that is fine. All of that bad behavior is 100% A-okay. So long as you get to live lavish. But if it interrupts it, hell no, you going down. And I just think that those people are just all trash. They are a reflection of each other, the laws of attraction in play.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm glad that she mentioned Dan Scavino, because it's a reminder that, you know, as anti-democratic, as fascistic as Donald Trump is, like there are plenty of people who are more active than him, younger, more virile, that would love to overthrow democracy. And him and the think tanks are just a crew. They're gathering this army of thousands of Dan Scavinos, where, like I said, thankfully he was wrong. They did leave, but will they next time? Like we cannot forget. There's so much else going on. Obviously, from the rundown of the show, there's a lot going on, but we cannot forget who these people are, how hostile towards our system of government they are, and how close we came to 2020 going in a very different direction. Yeah. Now that said, unfortunately, quick final comment to you.
No, I was just going to say how negotiable they are. It really isn't about being pro-democracy, anti-democracy. They are negotiable. And that the worst kind of person you can ever lock arms with is somebody who is easily negotiated in any direction.
Yeah, to do horrific things in some cases. Okay, with that said, we're going to close out the hour with a very different topic that I wanted to make sure that we got Ida's views on. So let's jump into this.
We are right on every issue. The Democrats are wrong on every issue. That's why they frantically cling to abortion as their only issue that they think may work for them. In some cases, it has demonstrated that it does. But I think part of the problem is that we surrender and we default to the media narrative, the left narrative. This is a loser for us. The Democrats are extreme on abortion.
That is Representative Bob Good. And like every other Republican, whether in elected office, a commentator, whatever, like you have to respond to the fact that once again, the voters rejected your position on abortion, on reproductive rights and general topics like that. They simply don't agree with you. Now, that should not come as a surprise to anyone because going back 50, 60 years, the American public has not agreed with these ghouls, with these goblins. But we are now at least seeing it not just in polls, but acted out in state after state where they continue to lose. But that said, like so many of the other Republicans, Representative Bob Good does not believe that they should back down. He actually has a strategy. Take a look at this.
We need to be unflinchingly, unapologetically pro-life. I think when you have moderation, you have tepid, vanilla, benign statements on the issue of life. You're trying to talk about 15-week bans that only affect less than 10% of abortions. I think what that does is that demotivates our base. It's not inspirational. It depresses or suppresses a turnout in red states. And it leads to us losing elections, quite frankly. We need to be bold and aggressive and paint with bright red colors on this issue.
The imagery of painting with bold red colors, he said, just like when you think about the actual stakes in this and what happens to people under the legal system that they want to set up when it comes to reproductive health, I would phrase that differently, but they love the color red. They love our country being painted in more and more red. But anyway, like so many others, Ida, he believes that there is some way for them to win on this issue, not by being more understanding or, you know, talking to the people that are affected by these laws, but just being more extreme, more radical in the way that they talk about this. No moderation is what he said. What do you think?
Of course, The Handmaid's Tale. They want this to be Gilead. What I think is that they should be bold about homelessness, bold about drug addiction in those red states that have these high, there's a high connection of drug use and homelessness in those states. They like to always point to New York and California when they're talking about homelessness, and homelessness is directly connected to a lot of addiction. These veterans that come back that we spit on, that we don't take care of, these VAs that are, you know, inconsistent. You're talking about libraries that have books that kids have to go check out books so that they can get information from school. And those are the kids that are being pushed with initiative because they don't have good book. They don't have the books that they need in schools. Teachers don't have supplies. I'm at the dollar store. I go to the dollar store. I see a teacher buying her own supplies for her class, and I paid for it because I was like, this don't make no damn sense. I'm so mad that my tax dollars are not helping you do what you need to do. So I'm going to do what I need to do here. This is what you should be bold about instead of trying to control women's bodies. It's such a fascination that it's almost perverted to hear the preoccupation and obsession with this issue that has to do with health, with women's health. And you don't see that type of fervor when it comes to, you know, prison reform, education, healthcare, the things that people are affected by on a daily basis. Because how many people do you know are having abortions every day? Not anybody, but people do need healthcare, and you don't see that type of fight for it. And the dummies who continue to support these people are who are suffering are still standing behind them. And it is so frustrating.
100%. And so many of those issues that you brought up, if you really cared about life and how sacred life is, these are issues that you have to care about. And yet so many do not, particularly the elected ones. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the first hour of the show. Thank you, everybody who's been listening, especially if you're listening on the podcast. I know you only get the first hour, unfortunately, but there's a lot more to come. You can get to it on the YouTube channel, and we'll be back with more after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.